You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is the 10th of March 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Unfortunately, Matthew Heidmark is unable to join us today, but we do have a very special guest with us. We have Florian Geyer from Mysterium Fasces to stand in for him today. How are you doing today, Florian?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself, Sven?
Yeah, excellent. It's really quite beautiful weather here at the moment in Britain. We had the hottest day of the year so far yesterday, and today not quite so good, but the daffodils are up, the flowers are up, the birds are out. It's just nice to be here in the springtime in Britain. What's it like there? Is it still snowy where you are, or have you got...
The temperature is varying wildly. Just 2 days ago it was plus 10 degrees Celsius, and now today it's minus 15.
Wow, that's quite some difference. I think we're quite hardy people, aren't we? White people can exist anywhere in the world without technology. Talking about technology, that's the subject that we're first going to talk about today, I think, was with these WikiLeaks exposure of the CIA and what they've been up to. I'm sure the listeners are probably aware of it, but do you want to run down what these WikiLeaks have been about, Florian?
Certainly. So WikiLeaks, earlier this week, Monday or Tuesday, they released a series of leaks titled Vault 7, which essentially were a series of hacking tools developed by the CIA's cyber warfare division that had been leaked to the internet, and public and hackers had gotten a hold of them and given them to WikiLeaks. And so part of the apparently they've got just loads and loads and loads of information, documents and software and all this sort of thing. But essentially the revelations amount to that the CIA had in their cyber warfare division developed the necessary software and tools and backdoors to impregnate any device on the planet, essentially. Operating systems, telecommunications applications, smart televisions and other devices. They can basically skirt around any of the encryptions and the defenses that had been built into them by the creators of these software. So essentially, I mean, it's nothing new for us, but they have, you know, on their own merits, NSA-level accessibility to all of the world's information.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking when you think they've also sort of lost control of it, haven't they?
And this is the thing.
It's not as if this technology is all under lock and key anymore. Anyone can grab hold of it. It's freely available on the internet, and I believe another side of it as well is that they've been leaving traces of other countries where they've been doing this. So if they've been, say, hacking into Germany and using this technology in Germany, they would have been leaving a signature as if it had been Russia that have been doing
it. Yes, precisely. You know, I mean, and this is the incredible thing. I mean, not only do we have, you know, nefariousness and so this sort of this just amorality to the core of this organization, but we've also got this combined with massive incompetence, because after they had this leak, they didn't try to correct it or inform people that there was a potential danger. They tried to cover it up.
It's like they've got false flag malware that's being used.
Precisely.
Apparently all the smart televisions in Russia have been equipped with this. I'm glad I don't have a smart television, but there are ways to get around this, I think. I mean, I've always not wanted to have a smartphone because I've always known that that can be used to find out exactly where you are, that could be used to control the microphone or the camera on it. So it's an idea not to have a smartphone if you can avoid having a smartphone. Obviously, if you've got a laptop, you can tape over the camera. I suppose with a microphone, you would want to do something, find out where the microphone is on there and block that up. And being podcasting, I always use a microphone that I plug in when I want to use it anyway. I mean, it would be a bit strange trying to record people like ourselves, Florian, because, you know, we make our thoughts known anyway and put them on the internet.
Truly.
So I doubt whether they'd be bugging me. But I know that people are worried about this.
Certainly.
I would say another side to it is if you are anonymous anyway and you're using anonymous accounts and you're using anonymous phones, then the fact that they could tune into your phone and record you, it really isn't going to make that much difference. I think it's really the fact that this sort of technology could have been used in this hacking with the Democratic Party that the American media keeps talking about and trying to blame
exactly.
Russia for. That's the big point of it, I think.
I agree. I think that, you know, there are basically two big points here. The first is, as you said, that this kind of exposes, number one, that the CIA has absolutely zero credibility. And that's completely out in the open. And so the idea that the CIA was able to determine that it was Russia who had, you know, quote unquote, hacked the election, right? And this is the only source that they have, and they have no proof. And then in light of these revelations, well, I mean, we can see that they're absolutely, you know, they're full of shit, excuse me. You know, they've got no legs to stand on. You know, and as you commented before the show, Sven, I mean, it's very likely that, in fact, it's themselves that had hacked the Democratic National Convention and had left, you know, a false trail to implicate Russia.
Well, they could.
And I mean, it's, yeah.
They can never be relied upon again with information that they put forward, evidence that they put forward. If it's evidence that's come from the internet, if it's computer evidence, how could you trust them? How could you ever trust them after finding that out?
No, there's just absolutely no way. And I mean, I think that this is the best thing about these leaks is that it contributes to completely destroying any trust that the public might have in any aspects of the U.S. security apparatus. Now, of course, you know, with the NSA leaks a while ago, you know, we had kind of confirmed what everybody had suspected, that the United States government was engaging in widespread dragnet-style data collection of basically everything that goes on in the internet. But the irony here is that the CIA had independently developed all of these techniques so that they did not have to work with the NSA, revealing the fracturing and kind of petty competitiveness within the U.S. security apparatus.
So you have two organizations there that are competing mm-hmm. with one another to spy on the public, and only one of them is supposed to be spying on the public. In fact, the public don't want them to be spying on them at all. So, I mean, that's the revelation as well, isn't it? They only thought it was the NSA before, and why would the CIA be spying on its own people? Why would any organization need to spy upon its own people unless the authorities and the establishment were corrupt? They'd have to be, wouldn't they?
Truly, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if you trust your people and you work in their best interests, you don't have to engage in a police state style broad surveillance. But I think one of the important caveats to make is, you know, as we speak about this, the biggest concern, I think, for a lot of us on the far right, as this goes, is our own personal privacy, you know, in light of these revelations.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is something that I often get asked. People say, well, how can you keep yourself anonymous if you're wanting to use YouTube or you're wanting to make podcasts? In fact, I got asked this just the other day in the chat room, and I know that in Britain, you can buy pay-as-you-go SIM cards. You can buy three of them, I think, for £1. And you can buy them in a supermarket. So you can pay cash for pay-as-you-go SIM cards. And then you can set up your Google accounts. And, of course, Google want that verified. So they ask you whether you can give them a phone number. And then you just give them the phone number from the SIM card. You put the SIM card in your phone. You get that phone number. You give it to Google. Google then send a text to your phone. Make sure your phone is... the GPS thing is switched off, but if it has got malware in it, that may not work. But you're likely to be so far down the list that they're not going to be interested in your geolocation. They're going to be concentrating on other things. But so as soon as you get your Google number, you just put that into Google, and then that's your account verified. And you can do that three times with a SIM card before Google will say that's been used too many times now. Because the main reason for Google doing that is to verify that you're not actually a bot. It's not so that they can trace who you are and keep records of you. It's so that they know that it's not an account that's being set up so that people can then go and spam others with advertising. That's the main reason for it. And that's the best way to get yourself an anonymous account. And you can do that. You can get yourself three Google accounts just on that one SIM card, and then throw the SIM card away. Obviously, that's not super secure, but that's good enough if you're just wanting to remain anonymous and put up right-wing information online. That means that you're not going to have to give your name out there. I mean, that's just a bit of advice that I'd give. Have you got any advice on keeping yourself anonymous that listeners might be interested in, Florian?
Well, certainly. I mean, I think that there are... there are always countermeasures that you can take. I mean, if you're concerned about being identified by your IP address, I mean, you can get a VPN and connect this way, and you can get certain applications that automatically enable encryption when you connect to websites. You know, you can get IP switchers and switch those things up. But I think ultimately, I mean, here's the big thing. You know, if the authorities want to dox you, they can. They certainly have the ability to do so. And we know for a fact that they are collecting all of the data that's being sent out across the internet to begin with. So, I mean, what you have to basically operate under the presumption is that everything that you type, everything that you say on the internet is being recorded somewhere. Now, here's the important caveat. Probably it's not being looked at. There's two important things. Number one, the federal government of the United States is very incompetent. And we've seen damning proof here with the CIA that they are, in fact, fairly incompetent. And more than that, there are physical manpower issues where they have all of this data, but you actually have to have people look at this for them to, you know, persecute you in any sort of meaningful way. And so what I would say is that, you know, you can engage in all of these countermeasures in an attempt to obfuscate who you are and the information that you're sending. But ultimately, I think that we just need to operate under the presumption that they're going to know anyway. And so what the biggest thing is that they probably don't care. But if they did, there's not really a lot that you can do to stop them. I kind of operate under the presumption that this is just part of the risk of the business. If the government wanted to dox me, it'd be very easy to do so. I mean, I take certain countermeasures and operate under anonymity, but there's not really so much that can be done. But you just sort of have to, you know, come to grips with this reality that it's a very real possibility.
Yeah, you certainly don't want to be planning on doing anything illegal online or
of course, certainly
carrying out violence or anything like that. I mean, the only way they could persecute us is for hate speech. But even then, I think we've got a good argument. Free speech, you have to say how the world appears to you. You have to speak what you see around you. I mean, that's a verse from the Book of Acts. You have to say what you see and speak what you hear, and that's what it means to be human. You have to be able to speak your opinion to your fellow humans. So long as you're not encouraging violence against people, then I think you could argue it in court that you should be allowed to say what your experience has been. And if somebody else thinks that is discrimination, well, you discriminate between everything in your life. You discriminate between what is good for you and what is bad for you. But you still don't want to make things easy for them. And again, you don't want to make things easy for Antifa and anarchists, because they will try to intimidate and persecute people as well. I think that's more of a threat than the government actually doing it, because for the government to be doing that, you would have to have broken a law first. They'd have to have a criminal investigation against you, and then they could look at all the information that the intelligence agencies had saved about you. I mean, over here in Britain, they're saying that all the internet companies have got to keep records of all the browser history, all the email history, and that's just so much information. There's no possible way that anybody could actually look through all of that. It can only be if they're actually targeting you to do that. Hopefully things aren't going to escalate and they aren't going to start calling us terrorists just for disagreeing with what they say, but they are already using that in the statistics. We've got a report today in Britain, 1 in 3 terror suspects are white. 1 in 3. And yet there's never been any terrorism that I'm aware of carried out by anyone white in Britain. There was the murder of Joe Cox, but that wasn't terrorism. He wasn't part of any political organisation. The government said that he was a white supremacist, but the only thing they had to prove that was a book that he bought from America 20 years ago. And he had some Second World War movies, but that was all. So this 1 in 3 terror suspects are white, that they can only be including people that they've prosecuted for hate speech, people that have been criticizing politicians or criticizing Jews on Twitter. So they're now saying that somebody who is white that speaks up for white people is the equivalent of a Muslim that chops somebody's head off. Because, I mean, that's what terrorism right. is. It's violence, isn't it? Has to be violence involved.
Truly. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I guess it's all of it's national actions, white jihadi training methods that have put them under the microscope. But this is what they've been trying to do for 30, 40 years. I mean, this is what the ADL purposefully tried to advance, is they wanted to create the conflation between, you know, radical Islamic terrorism and, you know, white, pro-white activism, and lump us in the same category. Now in the United States, we've had a major win where President Donald Trump has actually moved the category of white advocates outside of the purview of their anti-terrorism programs, but it's clear that this is still occurring in the United Kingdom. But I mean, you point out rightly, I mean, where are the plans for terrorist activity? Where are the networks of violent extremists that are actively plotting violence? Where are the funding networks of international white extremists that are supporting, you know, violent terroristic action? They don't really exist. You know, this is a specter created by our enemies.
No, it's a total fantasy. I mean, it's not even like there are any white nationalists calling for violence. Nobody's calling for violence against ethnic minorities. And yet we have Muslims that are calling for violence against white people, calling for violence against Christians, against Europe. You've got the Islamic State that obviously calling for terrorism to take place in Britain. And you've got people that say that they support the Islamic State in Britain, that it don't seem to get locked up for that. And yet we end up with people being prosecuted and charged just for criticizing Jews or criticizing Muslims. And one instance of this, we've talked about this earlier this week, but with Jez Turner, this group which are going after him, this campaign against anti-Semitism, somehow they've managed to get television interviews. They've been on primetime BBC, they've been on Sky TV, they've been on ITV, they're in every single newspaper, all talking about how the Crown Prosecution Service got it all wrong, that they didn't prosecute Jez Turner 2 years ago, how they've spent the last 2 years working all the man hours they could with all the money they could to pressure the Crown Prosecution Service to prosecute Jez, basically. And the Crown Prosecution Service have said that they will look at this case once again, but they're not saying they will prosecute him. But the way that this campaign against anti-Semitism are going on in all these BBC interviews, it's as if it's all done and dusted. They're putting on all this pressure onto the Crown Prosecution Service to go after this one man just because they don't like what he said. And yet he's the one that is the victim in all of this. All he was doing is exercising his right to free speech. And all these Jews that were there on that day, they wanted to kill him. They were shouting that they wanted to kill him. They were shouting that they wanted him to be arrested. The police had to have a cordon around him to protect him from these Jews that had blood on their minds. And yet these Jews have then got the cheek to go to the Crown Prosecution Service and they've got the cheek to whine on BBC and on Sky TV that they were the victims. They've already been told that they're not the victims. How could anyone there be classed as a victim? I really think that if this case goes to court, the Jews are going to get a bloody nose from this. Because I don't think that any, I don't think there's a jury in the land that will convict Jez Turner of victimizing these Jews. Not when there's 1,000 of them and there's only one of him. And he wasn't using any racially derogatory terms. And this hate speech law, it's about if people feel threatened. Now, how could they feel threatened when it's just one man there? It's an absolute nonsense. I hope it doesn't go to court. Now, I think this just shows you the extent of the power that the Jews actually has. What this group have done is prove Jez Turner 100% correct in everything that he said in his speech, just by the fact that they'd managed to do all this and pull all these strings in order to get the Crown Prosecution Service to turn around and say that they're going to look at his case again. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens there anyway. But it is the Jews that are behind all of this. It's the Jews that are pushing for all these changes to the free speech legislation. And all we can do is keep speaking out, because there's also the question of numbers. I think, Florian, if we've got so many of us that are doing this, they can't possibly go after everyone. So they will try to make examples. They'll try to make an example out of Jez. But if Jez goes down, there'll be another 10 that will pop up to take his place, because none of us are giving up. None of us.
No, I think you're exactly correct. I mean, I really do hope that justice in this case is served. You know, I agree with you that it seems so preposterous that I do not suspect that, you know, any legitimate jury could actually convict him of, you know, inciting violence or threatening the Jews based on what he said. This is absurd. And, you know, this is the story with these Jews. This is one as old as time itself. I mean, you know, this is the same thing that they did before Pontius Pilate. This is the same thing that we see in the Book of Acts, where they haul Paul in front of the Roman proconsul, and this is what they do. They make a big hullabaloo, and they try to get the legitimate authorities to crucify people that they don't like. And so, I mean, I think the thing that is critical here to understand is that if things continue the way that they are, the justice system will begin to wrongfully convict men who speak their mind and tell the truth. That will occur. And so I think that we have to understand fundamentally what we're getting ourselves into and be ready for that when it does come.
Well, we already have them, these marchers that are in prison, and they're not backing down. We've got Joshua Bonehill, Lawrence Burns, there are plenty of others. And I find it's absolutely fascinating, isn't it, that they're still doing exactly the same thing today that they were 2,000 years ago. And it's incredible, that, isn't it? Yeah, like you say.
No, I did really. Yeah,
you just look at the biblical account of those court cases and the way that the Jews pressurized the Romans to crucify Christ and going after Paul, and it's exactly the same thing today. They're pressurizing this Crown Prosecution Service. They haven't even made their decision yet, and yet they're already the campaign against anti-Semitism are already out doing all these interviews, so that as if the decision has already been made to re-prosecute him, to re-look at it again. It's absolutely incredible. This manipulation of the state and manipulation of the judicial apparatus, and they don't appear to have any self-reflection on this at all. They don't appear to be able to understand the way that it looks to somebody who is impartial, because they think they're being impartial, but they're obviously not. I mean, if you look at that, you think you've got one man there who just spoke his mind. And you've got this entire pressure group with hundreds of thousands of pounds behind them, with this law that they've managed to get brought in that you're not allowed to criticize these people. And if you do criticize them, then it's the equivalent of chopping somebody's head off. That's the equivalent of it. That's what we learned with the with calling National Action terrorists. They were basically saying that sending a mean tweet or a badly worded tweet is the equivalent of blowing yourself up, blowing up.
That's the mentality of these Jews. You're correct in pointing out that they have absolutely zero self-reflection. You know, I mean, they're on fire and they're sniffing and saying, "Do you smell smoke?" And we say, "Well, that's you on fire, Jews." And they say, "No, I'm not on fire." Right? And so, I mean, but this is just Nuremberg-style justice. I mean, if we look at what happened with the original Daily Stormer, I mean, they executed the publisher of that newspaper because he said mean things about the Jews. And that is their fundamental mentality all the way back to Ananias, the high priest who conspired, and the Caiaphas who conspired to kill our Lord. I mean, they don't zero self-reflection. And the worst thing, and as you point out, is that they have this pretense of righteousness, and you know, that they are continually the ones who are victimized, and this perpetually legitimizes them. And now I know this won't be anything new for any of our listeners, but this is an eternal story, it seems.
Well, it is. I think it's good to actually put it in that context. You know, the fight against good and evil, light against dark, fight against purity, against impurity. And I think it's very good to put it in that framework. I mean, people can knock Christianity, but Christianity is, as you know, it's identified the Jew for what he was, and he killed our Lord. As you say, the Jew killed Jesus Christ, the center of Christianity. I'm baffled when people can say that Christianity is pro-Jewish. You don't read about the Jew in any of the pagan myths or any of the other religions. It doesn't warn you about the Jew, but Jesus warned us about them. St. Paul warned us about them.
Well,
and
yes,
here we are, seeing the same today.
I was just reading a quote today from St. Jerome, who was saying, if you call the synagogue a den of horrors, the dwelling place of demons, the center of decay and decrepitness, all of these terms are too light to describe it. It's a paraphrase, but that's more or less what he was saying.
Well, they're all accurate. I mean, we had these fantastic early fathers of the church, St. John Chrysostom as well, Ignatius of Antioch, and they would thunder against the Jews. They really would. And today we haven't got anyone mainstream in the church that's speaking out against them. I can think of Bishop Williamson. He gave a very brave letter that he sent out the other week, and it was exposing the Jews as being behind the immigration agenda. And he's the only English-speaking priest that I can think of that still actually holds true to tradition and speaks out against the Jews and shows the similarities of what the Jews were like in Jesus' time to what they are doing today. And these free speech marches that we have, I mean, they are real marches. They are in prison. We've got somebody that was sent to prison, Florian, for leaving a piece of bacon on a mosque door, and he was sent to prison for a year, and he died in prison. And we don't know how this happened. We don't know if he was murdered. We don't know if it was an accidental death, a drug overdose, or what. They're not telling us. They've said that they're going to investigate it. And it must be coming up 4 or 5 months since this actually happened. You think, dying in prison for a speech crime. So we do actually have real marchers that are being sent to prison and dying there. Have we got Amnesty Yep. International doing anything? Are they interested? No, never. They've got no interest in it at all. They had no interest in David Irving, and they've got no interest in the political prisoners that we have now. Perhaps this is an opportune moment to remind people that we do have a list of political prisoners in Britain, and they do very much enjoy being written to, and we have got a lot of loyal listeners that do write to them regularly, so I'll just say thank you to them for that. Have you got have you had any marches over there in Canada, Florian?
There are a few that I can recall that have been prosecuted for hate speech, although I couldn't bring up names. I mean, it happens once in a while. One of the things is the nationalist movement in Canada is not very developed. I mean, we don't have anything in this country like National Action or even like the Traditionalist Workers' Party or anything like this. And this is, I think, a consequence of the immense size of the country and the great diaspora of the population and the huge cultural rifts that separate us. I mean, this country, in my personal opinion, is an economic union and nothing more. And so I don't think that Canada, as that entity, can actually exist even if there was a takeover of government tomorrow. I personally think that this country is doomed.
So it's a different,
and I don't say that as a defeatist, but I say that, you know, I think that this is a great opportunity. It's a reason to fight harder to establish the sovereignty of our own people, to promote ourselves rather than this false confederation.
Yeah, it's a rather different form of nationalism that you have there. I mean, all I can say from the many people that have been prosecuted for just speaking their minds in Britain, I mean, what it does show you is how absolutely terrified they are of us. And if they're going to go to all these lengths to try and get Jez Turner locked up, I mean, they must be absolutely petrified of him. And they don't go after the BNP anymore. They don't go after UKIP. They go after the London Forum and the speakers there, because they know that our reach online is far more than any of these political parties have ever had. I mean, Jez must have had over 1 million views on the London Forum channel of the speakers that he's had there. I mean, the establishment really are terrified of us, and we are having a success. You know, if they are that frightened of us, then we have to be doing something right, I think, Florian. Anyway, that pretty much brings us to the end of the podcast. So I'll say thank you very much for stepping in there, and I very much enjoyed the discussion. I'm sure our listeners have as well. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Matthew Heimbach will be back on Monday with a new edition of the Daily Traditionalist. So from me and Florian, we both hope you all have a wonderful weekend. So it just remains for me to say, hail victory!
You've been tuned into the Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.